The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Today on the Town Hall Review with Hugh Hewitt, brought to you in partnership with the Pepperdine Graduate School of Public Policy. This week, the nation awaits the release of the Supreme Court's Dobbs decision on abortion, and we've seen violence at pregnancy care clinics and an assassination effort targeted at Justice Kavanaugh.
This court, for now, at this brief moment in time and space, is conservative, and they can't accept that, and so they're going to try to destroy it.
The High Court's term winds down, and they release a very strong defense of the Free Exercise Clause, your right to practice your faith.
It was a big victory for religious freedom yesterday.
Plus, a look at the shrinking Chinese economy, why it matters, and how President Xi is responding to it.
It sees, I believe, a closing window of opportunity to accomplish what they believe are historic goals.
All this and more. I'm Hugh Hewitt. Great to be with you. Catch my program each weekday morning live, 6 to 9 a.m. Eastern Time and on demand 24/7. Learn more at HughHewitt.com. And follow me, please, on Twitter, at Hugh Hewitt. Follow this program as well at Town Hall Review. We begin in Washington with the Supreme Court. The court has been releasing final opinions from their work this term. We'll be looking a bit closer at a key win for religious liberty in a moment, but first, activists on both sides of the aisle have been anxious for the court to release the final decision on the Dobbs case. Dobbs involves the challenge to a Mississippi abortion law that is expected to overturn Roe v. Wade when the final decision and opinion are handed down. Of course, it's the decision that was leaked in draft form in early May. Since then, we've seen violence at pregnancy care clinics, protests at the home of the justices, and an effort to assassinate Justice Kavanaugh. It is really unprecedented. Victor Davis Hanson joined my colleague Sebastian Gorka.
You mentioned Roe v. Wade and the disturbances of the pro-abortion demonstrators, even in cathedrals in California. How significant in terms of the American history and the body politic is the leak from the Supreme Court of that decisional document?
Well, it's a battle, but it's part of an unprecedented war. FDR ran a war in 1937 and 8 to try to pack the court, but never in our right minds did we think a party would promote or condone, or even the president would ignore the fact that they're targeting the homes of Supreme Court justices, and they're going out there to intimidate them, which is a felony, federal felony to do that. Or you have a Chuck Schumer who just a few years ago went out in front of the chambers and screamed and said that you've sowed the wind and you're going to reap the whirlwind. You don't know what's going to hit you. Or when they talk about packing the court, or when they mention people by name in a very scary fashion, or you have somebody who's caught red-handed after his sister talked him into calling, who was going to kill a Supreme Court justice, and it didn't even make the story. So there is an unprecedented attack on the Supreme Court because they feel that the Congress cannot deliver an agenda in a predictable fashion because the American people are not left-wing. But since the Warren era, every time they've had a court, they can bend, flip, manipulate, force conservative picks to go left, whether that's a John Paul Stevens or a Souter. There's dozens of them. But this court, for now, at this brief moment in time and space, is conservative, and they can't accept that. And so they're going to try to destroy it, whether it's packing it or intimidating it or worse. And so it's just unfathomable that Joe Biden wouldn't get out there and say, this is obstruction of justice when you try to intimidate the highest justices in the United States to vote a particular way. Are you going to show up out of their house like thugs out of a third world country?
How much is all of what we are witnessing, this radicalism from trying to pack the Supreme Court to the transgender agenda, a direct evolution of Foucault's thinking, the Frankfurt School, deconstructionism, moral relativism? This can be plotted on a timeline, can it not?
It can. And what's even more ironic about it, that the Reagan economic idea of tax cuts and deregulation, which was more or less continued in part even by all the way into the Clinton era. But my point is that we created an enormous amount of money and leisure and wealth.
Yeah.
And these foreign, I don't want to be xenophobic, but these ideas imported from the left of Europe, they really had fertile ground to take, because people said, you know what, we can talk these insane things. We can advocate insanity about race or climate change because things are so good. So Joe Biden, he would have never said, I'm going to end all fossil fuels, had gas been $7 or $8 a gallon. He only did that because of the Trump success. And the same thing about the border and critical legal theory and critical race. They could only say that because they were critiquing a very viable, successful thing that was created by people antithetical to themselves. But now, once they've taken over and they've destroyed that paradigm, people are saying, you know what? There's no more margin of error. There's no fat left on the animal anymore. If you continue to do this, you're right into the vital organs of this country, and it's a lot more fragile than we thought it was. This very fragile multiracial democracy that has a very, very high expectation for the standard of living and upward mobility, but it's on the razor's edge.
Okay, let's play that cut from President Reagan.
Our founding fathers here in this country brought about the only true revolution that has ever taken place in man's history. Every other revolution simply exchanged one set of rulers for another set of rulers. But only here did that little band of men so advanced beyond their time that the world has never seen their like since evolve the idea that you and I have within ourselves the God-given right and the ability to determine our own destiny. But freedom is never more than one generation away from extinction. We didn't pass it on to our children in the bloodstream. The only way they can inherit the freedom we have known is if we fight for it, protect it, defend it, and then hand it to them with the well-taught lessons of how they in their lifetime must do the same. And if you and I don't do this, then you and I may well spend our sunset years telling our children and our children's children what it once was like in America when men were free. Thank you.
For all those who remain vigilant and engaged in political life in our nation, the Supreme Court would have to be Exhibit A for us in the case for hope, for optimism. The Roberts Court has not yet yielded to the bullying tactics, has not yet adjusted their schedule as a result of the recent leaks, and importantly, they have continued to release decisions that are constitutionally grounded, principled, and clear. That held again this week in a 6-3 decision in a case coming out of Maine. And a challenge to Maine's law that would allow a family in rural Maine to use state resources to get a private secular education, but not a private religious education. I turn to Arkansas Senator Tom Cotton. Let me ask you about yesterday's Supreme Court decision 6-3 upholding the free exercise clause. You are a Harvard Law graduate. I have played Jeffrey Toobin's analysis. I've played other CNN analysts saying that the Establishment Clause is under threat. What do you say to them, Senator Cotton?
Well, the Establishment Clause is not under threat to you. What has long been under threat because of misguided and outdated Supreme Court cases is the Free Exercise Clause. And I'm grateful that the court once again ruled that when a state government wants to provide funding for parents on neutral grounds to educate, single out religious schools as uniquely disqualified from getting those funds. That's what the state of Maine had done in districts where there were no public high schools. They would give state funds to parents to help educate their teenage children if they had prohibited it from going to religious schools. This is in keeping with other decisions that have been made in recent years. There was a case out in Montana a year or two ago. All these states should just get it through their mind that they cannot single out religious schools or religious institutions for unique or special kinds of mistreatment or debarment from federal funds. It was a big victory for religious freedom yesterday.
Yeah, but we have to keep winning the same war. It's the third time. The Chief Justice's audible sigh is in his writing, saying, how many times do we have to tell you that free exercise cannot be abridged in the name of a bad Establishment Clause doctrine? Now, Senator, this will be a tough question for you. I have a column coming out in the Washington Post today saying Joe Biden's just got to shake it up. He's got to move Ron Klain over to replace Merrick Garland. He's got to get rid of the deadwood in the White House. He's got to put new secretary. Has any Biden cabinet secretary gotten even a C? It's a tough question. Has any of them done even an average job? Because I honestly don't think any of them have, but maybe you can think of one.
I can't think of one, Hugh. Most of them are down in the F territory, similar to their boss's grade. You know, a year ago, Democrats were talking about Joe Biden being the second coming of FDR and LBJ. I think at this point, we'd all just be satisfied if he could claw his way back to being the second coming of Jimmy Carter.
Yeah, I'm glad the president wasn't hurt when he fell off of his bike. But metaphors like that one are pretty hard not to comment on, Senator.
Well, there's that bike meme on the Internet that people have used hundreds and hundreds of times. And it looks like Joe Biden was living out the bike meme of putting a stick in his own spokes. And he's really put a stick in the spokes of America's economy and America's defenses over his first year and a half in office. It's time to get the sticks out of the spokes and start driving hard forward to a much better future for our country.
Last question, Senator.
Democrats are in charge in Washington.
Heather Boucher is a Biden economic advisor. She was on the Washington Post Live yesterday. And I'm not going to play you the whole quote on enough time, but she said, we're not worried about the recession or inflation because family balance sheets are strong and there's enough wiggle room to get through these times. Is that what you hear in Arkansas or when you're in New Hampshire or Iowa or wherever you're going?
But no, that may be what they say up in Northwest Washington when they go to their fancy dinner parties because they've insulated themselves from the consequences of their own decisions. But when Arkansans are paying $4.50 a gallon for gas and $4 or $5 for a carton of eggs, there's not a lot of wiggle room. And to the extent family has wiggle room, it's getting tighter and tighter every month as budgets get more and more crunched. So
I just had a trucker call from Columbus. Just had a trucker call for $6 plus for diesel in Columbus. That means everything that is delivered is going to go up by a buck and a half or 20%.
Yeah. Well, energy inflation is a particularly corrosive kind. As you say, Hugh, energy inflation affects every nation, the price of goods that our factories produce for us. And energy inflation ripples through the entire economy. Now, remember, the energy inflation we're seeing, whether it's the price of gas or the price of electricity, is not an unintended consequence. It's not an accident. This is exactly what the Democrats want to happen. Bernie Sanders and Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez have proposed that we eliminate all fossil fuels from our energy mix in 10 years, Hugh, in just 10 years. You know, that's 90% of all the electricity we generate in America. You know, they have this fantasy that we're going to move to wind and solar. We get almost twice as much energy from wood, water, and crops in this country as we get from wind and solar. But the Democrats are putting their ideology ahead of your family's budget and our energy security and therefore our national security.
Coming up.
It sees, I believe, a closing window of opportunity to accomplish what they believe are historic goals.
A look at China and their shrinking economy when the Town Hall Review with Hugh Hewitt returns in a moment.
Grounded in our distinctive Great Books curriculum, the Pepperdine Graduate School of Public Policy prepares students for exciting careers in politics who understand the relevance of America's founding principles to today's policy challenges. From our Southern California campus, we've sent over 1,000 alumni across America and around the world. The application period for fall 2022 classes has begun. Find out more at pepperdine.edu/SPP. That's pepperdine.edu/SPP.
Welcome back to the Town Hall Review with Hugh Hewitt. As we look at the state of affairs in our nation, we see a political polarization with extreme elements on both the left and the right. We have cultural battles that pit us against one another in a way that we haven't seen before. It is sad, but it is also dangerous. Our infighting has distracted us from real threats and formidable competition from our adversaries on the world stage. I'm referring first and foremost to China, where they are looking at an economic slowdown, a big one. Gordon Chang will explain why it matters to us so much. He was a guest of Sebastian Gorka.
Give us the update from the Anchorage summit to today.
They've gotten much worse, Sam, and the reason is that the Chinese have become much more aggressive. From Anchorage, which was March of last year, we have gotten a series of propaganda blasts from Beijing around the fall of Afghanistan in August, where they're very clear and they're very open about it. And over the last couple weeks, we have heard the Chinese say things, and we've heard the we've seen the Chinese do things, which showed utter disrespect for the United States. So we're at a point where deterrence has broken down, and this is exceedingly dangerous, perhaps the most dangerous times in our lives. And, you know, people will look back at the Cuban Missile Crisis of 1962 or the Checkpoint Charlie Crisis of 1961 and say those look more dangerous. And yes, they did. But we also know now from the archives that both Kennedy and Khrushchev knew that they would never start a nuclear exchange. We don't know what Xi Jinping thinks about using his most destructive weapons. This, I think, is more dangerous than 61 and 62.
This is a crucial point because we have the archives declassified on our side. Thanks to the Matrokin archive, we have SCADs, huge amounts of KGB classified materials that were smuggled out of the Soviet Union during the last few days of its collapse. So we know that, whilst there was much bluster, Khrushchev banging his shoe on the table at the UN saying, "We will bury you," both sides really did hold to the mutually assured destruction balance. They knew if the birds flew from one end, then they would fly from the other end, and that's what kept that bipolar system stable. But we do not know. We do not know what is in the minds of the Chinese PLA, People's Liberation Army, or Xi Jinping, who's made himself really emperor for life of the biggest communist nation in the world. How do we read? Is it, again, is it bluster? Is it hyperbole? When in the last few days we have the organs of the state use the phrase or mention that China will now be engaging, Gordon, in non-military operations, which is exactly the phrase used by Putin for his invasion of Ukraine. Is that just empty rhetoric, or could that presage a move on Taiwan?
What I'm concerned about is, especially since July of last year, China's been making threats to use its nukes against first Tokyo and then Canberra. And now they have been going after us, of course. On March 10th, the Chinese military promised the quote-unquote worst consequences for countries that came to Taiwan's support. And periodically throughout this century, Chinese generals and political leaders have been making unprovoked threats against America to kill us in the hundreds of millions. So these threats have been made. We have not countered them. And I think that that creates in the minds of Chinese leaders that they might use them.
What is the similarity or the difference between, you know, hardcore Maoist regimes and today with the recent changes in the Constitution? Is this still the same beast, or is this China qualitatively different? And are the powers that Xi has given himself qualitatively different?
Xi Jinping reveres Mao Zedong. And over the course of his rule now of 10 years, we have seen him take China back to Maoism.
Gordon, let me move the discussion to your latest piece that I mentioned at the very beginning. It's titled China's Economy is Collapsing. Here's Why You Should Worry. Give us a précis of why everyone should be worried.
Well, the Chinese economy right now is contracting. The Communist Party for decades, its primary basis of legitimacy was the continual delivery of prosperity. Now they can't promise prosperity because it's obvious what's occurring in China with not only the bank runs, but also the property market plunging, all the rest of it. The only remaining basis of legitimacy for the Communist Party is nationalism. And that will force Xi Jinping and others to engage in military misadventure abroad, whether it's Taiwan or other places. This is a China that can take us by surprise because it sees, I believe, a closing window of opportunity to accomplish what they believe are historic goals. They are malicious. They are engaging in this unrestricted warfare against us. And we're just not prepared because we've got a president, for instance, who thinks that they're not even an adversary.
Give us a breakdown of why the economy in China is so fragile right now after 2 years of COVID.
They've got, first of all, the lockdowns, which have created a contracting economy. But that's not the fundamental problem. The most fundamental problem is that Xi Jinping, as we talked about before, is taking the Chinese economy back to a state-dominated model of a la Mao Zedong, which obviously didn't work. And then there's too much debt. We don't know exactly how much debt China has, but if you were to say an amount equal to, say, 350% of gross domestic product, you'd probably be in the neighborhood, maybe a bit more. And the reason why this is a problem is because that is preventing, that is distorting the economy. And so you have what is the critical property sector, about 30% of gross domestic product. It's not just that property prices are falling. What's really the problem is that there are no property sales. Property sales have declined like 34.5% in the first 5 months of this year compared to the previous 5 months in 2021. It means that property, which is considered to be a store of value for the Chinese people, is now becoming worthless in a sense because they can't dump it. And that means you've got a lot of people right now who are looking at an economy that is failing. It is just collapsing. And that is causing the Communist Party, as I said, I think, to act in much more belligerent ways. And that's why it's a concern to us.
What is the state of demographics inside China? Are they starting to recover from the one-child policy, or do they still have that significant imbalance of men to women in their population?
Well, they still have the imbalance in men to women, maybe 35 million more men than women.
Wow.
The real problem for them, though, is that they have not recovered from the one-child policy. They have a three-child policy right now, but people are not procreating. If you look at the numbers, China will lose about half its population in 45 years. This is just a bit of arithmetic, taking their total fertility rate and multiplying it out. By the end of this century, they will be a country of maybe 500 million, maybe a little bit more. In other words, they'll be about the same number of people as the United States.
But that is a massive, massive shrinkage.
Yes. I mean, even official projections show a collapse. And the point here, Seb, is that no country has ever been on facing such a drop in demography in the absence of war or disease. And we don't know how China will react to it, how the Chinese people will react to it, because this is completely unprecedented. They know that they get what they want by intimidating others. But if you got about the same number of people as the U.S., you're not going to be intimidating people, which means that Xi Jinping realizes he's got to move fast or he won't be able to move at all.
Coming up, a look at our national defense.
Let's move quickly as if we wanted to avoid a war. I mean, that's what deterrence is all about.
When the Town Hall Review with Hugh Hewitt returns in a moment. Stay with us.
The fight for the unborn is raging in our country. An unprecedented leak from the Supreme Court indicates that Roe v. Wade is on the brink of being overturned. The debates have never been stronger. The award-winning film, The Matter of Life, cuts through the rhetoric and hatred and exposes the real issues surrounding the plight of the unborn. The Matter of Life. Stream it today at salemnow.com and have your own life transformed as you watch The Matter of Life.
Welcome back to the Town Hall Review with Hugh Hewitt, brought to you in partnership with our sponsor, the Pepperdine Graduate School of Public Policy. As we look at our nation's defense posture under the Biden administration, we've seen an elevated degree of risk and vulnerability because of the weakness that Beijing sees coming from Washington. At most immediate risk is the island state of Taiwan and the threat they face from mainland China. I've been bullish on this. I think the Biden administration ought to make clear that we would absolutely defend our ally, Taiwan, if attacked by the Chinese Communist Party. Congressman Mike Gallagher is doing the hard work, though, to make sure that we at least have the capacity to help Taiwan. I talked to the representative from Wisconsin about this week's debate over the latest NDAA, the National Defense Authorization Act. Please tell people what the NDAA is, and then what are you looking to get done in it?
The National Defense Authorization Act, basically the bill, the annual bill that tells the Defense Department what it can and cannot do and how much money it's authorized to spend and what it is allowed to spend that money on. What I've written about in the past was something I've called Battle Force 2025. I wrote something with the Foundation of Defense of Democracies, and it's all about how we prepare to defend Taiwan from Chinese communist aggression. We're going to authorize 14 ships. We're going to preserve four amphibs plus one cruiser, and then save five LCS plus a couple other ships. So by my count, we're going from a 15-ship net loss to a plus two-ship gain after what the Golden Amendment passes. Jared Golden is a Democrat from Maine who's going to submit an amendment to increase the overall top line. So still not enough ships, by the way, Hugh. But a massive rejection of President Biden and Secretary Austin's plan for the Navy. And I think a positive bipartisan step where Congress is saying, no, we are not going along with this. We're not going to starve the Navy. We're not going to defund the Department of Defense at a time of rising geopolitical threats. So I think we'll see a good outcome on the overall top line, as well as on the specific attempts to reverse the cuts to the Navy that the president is proposing.
I brought along with me to provide and maintain a Navy our friend Jerry Hendrick's book on the sole constitutional command about force structure is that you and the Congress are to provide and maintain a Navy, that implicitly defends the United States. That means not only the additional ships, but the kind of ship. Did you add back a submarine? Is the Virginia class get an additional submarine?
I believe we did. There's going to be some debate over that, and then some bigger debate over what the defense industrial base, the shipbuilding industrial base, can handle right now. I mean, if you play any war game with regards to China and the U.S. fighting over Taiwan, you quickly realize how critical submarines are. Submarines give us an asymmetric advantage that right now China cannot match. So the stupidest thing we could do would be to take our foot off the gas when it comes to submarine production. Now, Hugh, here's the thing. Submarines exist for a variety of purposes, but one of which is to fire weapons in war. We quickly go, in any war game I've participated in, we quickly go Winchester on these weapon systems fired from subs, which means we fire all of them, and then we're out of gas. So further reason why we can't just have submarines, we also need long-range fires fired from positions in the southern Japanese island, as well as the northern Philippine islands, in order to target surface ships that are from the PLA Navy that are trying to cross the strait. And there we have a lot of work to do. Also, a lot of work to do in terms of delivering critical weapon systems to the Taiwanese. The latest reports are that the harpoons they want to buy aren't going to get there till 2027 or 2029. Hugh, that's too late. We need to completely restructure the way in which we provide foreign military sales to Taiwan. I don't think we're going to be able to do that in this bill because of jurisdictional concerns, because the Foreign Affairs Committee controls military sales. But this needs to be a top agenda item for a Republican-controlled Congress, a complete overhaul of our aid and foreign military sales structure to Taiwan in order to force them to buy asymmetric weapon systems in the short terms and get them the munitions they need within the Davidson window within the next 5 years.
Congressman, I want to explain something for the Steelers fans. The NDAA is not an appropriations bill. You are the Armed Services Committee is to the Appropriations Committee as an architect is to the general contractor. You give them the blueprint. They have to decide what to build. They have to decide what to spend. And so hopefully they will move. But to me, if the Republicans get the House back, they have to move immediately, and I hope you tell Leader McCarthy this, and soon-to-be Speaker McCarthy, that they've got to pass a Defense Appropriations Act in January 2nd week and send it to the Senate, which hopefully will be controlled by Leader McConnell. Because operating on a continuing resolution destroys the ability of the Department of Defense to actually get anything done. Can you move quickly, as though it were a war? If the Davidson window is real, and if the Republicans really believe in it, they ought to move quickly on the FY24 DOD budget, right?
100%. And you said move quickly as if it were a war. Well, let's move quickly as if we wanted to avoid a war. I mean, that's what deterrence is all about.
Coming up, the homelessness crisis.
There are these groups and organizations that are built around maintaining the status quo.
When the Town Hall Review with Hugh Hewitt returns in a moment.
Grounded in our distinctive Great Books curriculum, the Pepperdine Graduate School of Public Policy prepares students for exciting careers in politics who understand the relevance of America's founding principles to today's policy challenges. From our Southern California campus, we've sent over 1,000 alumni across America and around the world. The application period for fall 2022 classes has begun. Find out more at pepperdine.edu/SPP. That's pepperdine.edu/SPP.
Welcome back to the Town Hall Review with Hugh Hewitt. The nation's homeless crisis has really gotten out of hand. It is as maddening as it is heartbreaking. About 16 months ago, I visited Skid Row in Los Angeles for a day-long hearing presided over by Federal Judge David Carter, and I was astounded. Things have not only gotten worse since then, they've fallen completely off a cliff. The recent primary for the mayor's race in the City of Angels resulted in the two finishers who both succeeded based on their message that they would work to actually solve the epidemic homeless problem. Karen Bass, a congresswoman of long tenure, and the man I think really could make a difference, Rick Caruso, a businessman. Pete Peterson of the Pepperdine Graduate School of Public Policy joined Seth Leibson on AM 960 The Patriot in Phoenix.
There seems to be a kind of misplaced understanding or misprioritized understanding of compassion from what I can tell. I've been paying attention to some of that. I've been paying attention to some of the stuff Schellenberger's been writing. I looked around at it myself over the years. And then, of course, today going downtown. And the misplaced compassion is, you know, people don't want to, shall we say, deprive the homeless of their liberty claims. I have to tell you, I've never seen less free people. I have never seen less free people imprisoned in the grips of their addiction and mental illness. Because you think you are free doesn't mean you are free any more than because you think you're Napoleon means you're Napoleon, Pete.
Yeah, no, that's a very good point. Last week we hosted a conference here on campus with our friends at the Manhattan Institute, and I happened to be moderating one of the panels that had former Mayor Faulkner on the panel. And as we were discussing specifically this issue around homelessness, he made the very good point. This is a moral question and has to do with, and this is what really brought him into the issue. He was not an expert in homelessness when he first ran for mayor there, but he quickly got up to speed because he made those same kind of trips that you did today through the homeless encampments and just saw that we are actually being cruel to the homeless by the way that we are supposedly
enabling them. We are enabling their addiction and violence and mental health problems. We are enabling
them. That's right.
Yeah.
That's right.
I think that's...
And that is cruel.
And I think that is. Yeah. No, I think it is, too. I think it's cruel. And we haven't even talked about the violence that they commit against one another in these cop-free zones. There's a ton of sexual abuse and a ton of battery. And arson. Today, I observed an arson take place.
Yes.
People call these quality of life crimes. They don't want to enforce. All laws are about our quality of life. All of them.
Yeah.
Including our life.
Yeah.
And it's one of the saddest things to see, and it feels like we're just hamstrung by some what do I want to even call this, Pete? Some kind of inarticulable or institutionalized concept that no one knows how to battle against that doesn't allow us to do something about it. I mean, these are crimes. There are crimes against vagrancy. There are laws against vagrancy. There are against sleeping in public.
Yep.
We just refuse to enforce them, and I think that's wrong.
Yeah, and I think it gets back to a concept that we discuss many times in our conversations, which has been proven true over and over again in American politics and policy, that concentrated benefits will always outweigh diffuse obligations.
Yep.
And as was proven by a remarkable series of stories in the San Francisco Chronicle a couple of years ago, they called it the homeless industrial complex. That with these issues, there actually is a whole network of nonprofits and legal organizations that are funded in some instances by government funding and certainly other other philanthropy that is built up around this problem that is continuing to further these kinds of policies like Housing First, which is proven to be a failure. The thought that you respond to homelessness by providing homes sounds logical, but is anything but if you actually get to understand the problem. But there are a whole bunch of incentives around maintaining the status quo. And, of course, all to the end that we are really being cruel to the least among us in America's cities.
Is it an ideological thing that comes out of, I don't know, some perverted view of some of the stuff that Francis Fox Piven was writing about in the 60s to break the system? Or is it some kind of misplaced psychological effect on our politics that if it involves policing or if it involves enforcement of community standards, we're against it? Is it civil libertarianism run riot and without any moorings? What is the animating factor here? Is it all of it?
Yeah, I think it's a mix of all of it. And what's really just so difficult about homelessness as a public policy issue is that it does take in a number of related issues from public safety. There certainly is a set of issues that are new on the scene, like fentanyl, for example, and some of these housing approaches, which, again, are being pushed for the first time.
Because they think it's an issue of affordability, right? That's the point on that one, on that discrete.
Right.
They think it's unaffordable housing. That ain't the issue, but that's what they're
saying. It's not. I mean, the vast majority, if you go into homelessness encampments, the vast majority of people there are mental illness issues and there are drug abuse issues, and then there are the both of them together.
Yeah.
And, again, we in some ways are dealing with the deinstitutionalization of those who are suffering from mental illness. And there was an argument for that in some instances, but we're dealing with the results of that. But then there are also some of these new drug-related issues that we're dealing with in these communities as well. And as I said, there are these groups of organizations that are built around maintaining the status quo.
And I wonder if that's what plagues California. I mean, I don't get how you can look at the social destruction in certain places under certain ideological forms of governance, Newsom, for example, Gascon, for example, that kind of stuff, and keep voting these people in. I have no other explanation than that other one, which is numbness and censorship or shaming. I don't know if what I was saying made any sense. We kind of get used to a new normal. We become numb to the social destruction around us, thinking that that's just kind of the way it has to be.
Well, I think it's a couple things. Those that you outline, and I was just looking back at the election results from 2020 that brought George Gascon into the position of district attorney.
Mm-hmm.
And I would guess there are going to be a lot more people involved in the recall effort than there were in voting for him in the first place.
Yeah.
Coming up. In 2024, let's hand it over to somebody else who can still represent the MAGA policies.
A sneak peek at 2024. In the final segment of the Town Hall Review with Hugh Hewitt, stay with us.
Hi, I'm Gina Geraci. This week in the Christian Outlook, sponsored by the Pepperdine Graduate School of Public Policy. As the nation awaits a decision in the Dobbs abortion case, we see violence at pregnancy care clinics.
There's been this huge wave of violence by abortion activists, things like graffiti, all the way up to, you know, Molotov cocktails thrown through the doors.
Abby Johnson talks to us about how to be ready for the release of the Supreme Court's decision.
There is a pregnancy resource center in your community, and we need to be supporting them.
A very encouraging Supreme Court decision upholds the free exercise clause, thus the educational choices of families.
The conservative majority on the Supreme Court has said, look, the door has swung far too widely at the expense of the free exercise of religion.
All this and more. Be sure to join us and visit our website at ChristianOutlook.com.
Welcome back to the Town Hall Review with Hugh Hewitt. Any of you who have tracked with my program know that I have been and will remain heavily engaged in the 2022 election cycle. My hope and strong expectation is that the GOP ends up with a strong majority in the House and a working majority in the Senate. But the presidential cycle of 2024 will start before all the ballots of 2022 are even counted. An early poll coming out of New Hampshire has raised eyebrows. It found that 39% of likely Republican primary voters in the Granite State would support the first-term Florida Governor Ron DeSantis, with 37% backing the former president, Donald Trump. Two of my colleagues discussed former President Trump and Governor DeSantis, Mike Gallagher and Mark Davis.
I am hearing, Mark, whether people like it or not, from more and more Trump-supporting Republicans and independents who say he's going to be knocking on the door of 80 in 2024. We got Ron DeSantis waiting in the wings. Maybe it's time for a new face as the titular head of the Republican Party in 2024. Do you think the antics of this witch hunt Liz Cheney-inspired January 6th Select Committee is wearing people down, or is that sort of irrelevant over what seems to be a wearying of Trump support?
It's a great question, because is it possible that among the middle ground voters that Trump needed to win the first time, there are those who are saying, you know, Democrats are crazy, Biden's a failure, I think I could see myself voting for a Republican, but good Lord, him again? Ugh, I'm exhausted, and I just don't know. Is it possible that I just identified a couple million voters? Maybe I did, and it scares me.
You know what motivates me is the need to win. I'm not there yet. I don't think I'm where you are. The feedback I'm getting is there are people who say, I love the guy. I'd go through over broken glass for him. But in 2024, let's hand it over to somebody else who can still represent the MAGA policies. First of all, let's be real. I don't think there's anything about Ron DeSantis that is in conflict with the policies and the ideology of Mr. Trump.
I don't either. I've been looking for reasons to fall less in love with Ron DeSantis every day, and he just doesn't give them to me. The guy's, in fact, he may be upping his game. The battle against Disney, the battles with the media. What's the big thing about Trump is he seems kind of crazy quilt sometimes, but doggone it, he knows how to fight the left, which is something Republicans have been terrible at doing forever. DeSantis looks like he has that skill set. But as you point out the two columns from Kurt and your feelings and my feelings, et cetera, et cetera, I think one of the mistakes we can make is to presume that it's binary. One is either all in, you have to either be all in for Trump with no interest in anybody else, or totally done with Trump, no interest in him running.
Thank you for joining us for the Town Hall Review with Hugh Hewitt. Catch up on earlier episodes at our website, townhallreview.com, and sign up for a daily dose of the best in talk radio. Special thanks to executive producer Russell Schubin, producer David Pochon, Michael Cook, Tim Gruntner, Adam Ramsey, Jacob Orduña, and Dwayne Patterson. Let me say thanks once again to our sponsor, the Pepperdine Graduate School of Public Policy. I'm Hugh Hewitt. Thank you for joining us.
Three-star General Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.